Group meeting, Saturday, 18th May, 1985. But the religious life needs a rekindling of the pure flame of religion. How can that be done today? There are missionaries all over the world, as there have been for some centuries now, who devote themselves to the propagation of the particular faith to which they belong. But no local culture of the past, no formal garb of the existing great religions, Christian, Buddhist, Hindu, or any other, can effectively meet today's world need. We saw earlier on that a religion arises as the result of the human situation. When the human situation has become critical and urgent, there arises someone who once again shows the light. There are many liberal spirits who work for the unification of all religions. This really is a mistake. The religions are unique, and they are the only suitable ones for the region in which they flourish. They are the most suitable ones for the region in which they flourish. The variety which one finds in religion, in the different religions, is really of inestimable value to anyone who is concerned with studying and understanding the different religions of the world. So it is best not to attempt any unification of the religions. The unification comes from within one's own perceptions. One sees that the reality, the fundamental truth of religion has found expression in different ways for different people situated in different cultures and at different times in world history. So that is the unifying factor, and that can only come individually. No syncretist nor eclectic universal religion will save man from suffocating in his spiritual vacuum. There are well-intentioned good persons around whom grow new cults and whose adherents believe that they have the panacea for the world's ills. Now, this is a tremendous illusion. No one so ever had or ever can have or ever will have a panacea for all the world's ills. Because the world's ills are circumstantial mainly, and they come into being because of the people who live in that circumstance. And no one can know the circumstance and the kind of people who live in that particular region in full, leave alone the whole world. It's too vast a problem altogether. So you cannot have a panacea for all the world's ills. And especially in modern times, where there are 5,000 million people in the world now. I think it was 10 years ago, in 1975, that the world population had reached 4,500 million, and now it is practically 5,000 million. They say it will probably be 6,000 million before the end of the century. It's a terrific situation. 6,000 million people on the globe, and they are all different at different levels of development, understanding, capacities, outlooks, desires, and so on. It's a tremendous problem. Now, the people who believe that they have the panacea will not provide the bread of life, because they are philosophies and theories, and the practical disciplines they recommend are like alluring shallows, detracting one from the midstream stream course of meaningful living. We've had during our own lifetime the evidence in terms of Mussolini's fascism and Hitler's Nazism and so on. We have also seen the rise of Russian communism. Now, the philosophies, the underlying philosophies which are the foundation of their theories, and their theories apply only to the outward life of man, the political and economic life, is usually, in fact in all three cases, has been a philosophy of hate, of revenge, getting their own back, as we call it, in all cases. And in countries where what they call socialism is preached and upheld, and people work for a socialism which will become universal, they too are only partisan, after all. And a partisan solution is something, or rather theory, which purports to be a solution of the country's problems, is only for those who are inclined that way and who will work that way. There are others who are quite different. So you can't have any sort of ism like that which will really make for human life in the human sense. None of the above make or can make the needed response to the unique present. That response, which would rekindle the pure flame of religion today, could come only from those who have themselves realized the transcendent. Those who have realized the transcendent are the focal points through which the healing, purifying and healing forces of life flow. And it is from them that can come the influences which will help mankind onwards. But even they will never be able to produce a universal panacea. That is just asking too much of human beings. The founders of the great religions of the past were such men who had realized transcendence. They all, Krishna, Zarathustra, Buddha, Christ, announced a second advent. Certainly, a teacher appears again and again, but never as a repetition of a past form, which was a creative fulfillment for that specific living situation. Never again will Krishna, Zarathustra, or Jesus come back as persons recognizable as Krishna or Jesus or Zarathustra or anybody else. Because the movement of the spirit is non-repetitive, invariably unique in every manifestation of its single essence. This is something the human race has to wake up to. Perhaps it is just beginning now, in this part of this century, to begin to see such things. Because renovation comes out of the context of the infinite and the eternal. It cannot come out of the context of the finite and temporal, because it is the finite and temporal which is dying, which is decaying and dying. That is the process. If there is a birth, a coming into being, then there is a procedure or growing, and then that is inevitably followed by decay and death. Everything in manifestation undergoes that process. You can't get away from that. So it is not out of this context of the finite and temporal, which is the mortal context, that we can look for true renovation. That renovation, that creative renewal, can come only through the context of the infinite and the eternal. And only those who, at least in some degree, have realized, not merely seen as a thought or an idea, but have really seen as a fact that the infinite and the eternal is the source out of which this creative energy can function, can begin to flow in. So, this source, because it is infinite and eternal, is non-repetitive. It doesn't create the same thing even every successive split second. It is always new. And this, shall I call it, spirit of newness. This spirit of newness, which is divinity itself, permeates the situation as it is and influences it up to a point. Up to the point that the situation can accept it and can utilize it. And that is our individual human responsibility. That is why we have to be awake. You know how the Buddha, more than any of the other great teachers, emphasized being awake. Wake up to truth. Wake up to reality. Krishnaji does the same in our day and age. He is trying to wake people up to reality, to the truth, not seeking reality or truth outside themselves, because one can see it outside oneself only after one has seen it within oneself. That is the only way. See, we, constituted as we are unique, every one of us. There's no one in the world who is like any one of us. Everyone is unique, different. And each one living today is quite different from all that have lived in the past and all who will live in the future, as we call it. This is how nature itself works. If you study carefully the way in which the fertilized ovum comes into being and how it grows and how it inherits the qualities of the parents and so forth, you will see that in this process of the fertilization, a rearrangement of the genes and so forth takes place, which makes that particular individual quite unique. He's not exactly a repetition of his father or grandfather or mother or grandmother or anybody else. The number of permutations and combinations are literally countless, for the very simple reason, you know how, for instance, the brain contains 13 billion cells. Now, you know, when you work out the permutations, you get this position that a number of permutations is factorial so-and-so, which means factorial 10 means 10 multiplied by 9 multiplied by 8 multiplied by 7 right up to 1. You see? You don't multiply by naught, otherwise the whole answer is naught. You see? It is like that. Now with 13 billion cells, consider the scope. It's absolutely infinite for us, you see. So, each one of us has to play his part, do his job properly. Not looking for success or failure, for happiness or fulfillment or anything. Don't look for anything for the self. Because in looking for anything for the self, we ourselves bring into being the forces that obstruct not only our fulfillment, but the fulfillment of those to whom we are closely related and with whom we come into contact. So, keep an open mind, keep a glowing heart, and freely and happily live through each day. Keep hold of that freedom and happiness in calm and peace. Calm spelled C-A-L-M, not C-L-A-M. Because clam is cold, isn't it? Now, the teacher of today will draw afresh from the timeless spring of truth, and he will fill a new cup fashioned by the need of the new world age. Let the old go. Whoso has the heart to lift the cup to his burning lips will be healed, and then only really live as himself. Are the earnest ones then to light their candles and search for the world teacher? Because the holy ones will keep coming again and again, always. That is the way of life in the realm of the finite and the temporal. The critical situation arises, and there is always someone or some group which resolves the crisis. Are they to watch for the new dawn when a world savior will come from on high and give a world teaching upon which, as a foundation, will be constructed the edifice of a world religion? Great teachers inspire and transform their devotees by the influence of their living presence. It is not so much what they just say or write which does the work. It is their living presence which is so important. Because a person's living presence, if he's an advanced, a developed person, wakes up the inner consciousness of those with whom he comes in contact. And that is the real source of renewal, of creativeness, and improvement and betterment and fulfillment. That is the real source. So their living presence does that. Of course, when the teacher himself, when the great teachers died, or when any living teachers now die, they, of course, their living presence is gone. But it has had sufficient influence to inspire so many people to work upon it and to develop and advance along the right lines, and therefore the teacher's influence lives through millennia. Consider, for instance, Zarathustra. 35 centuries have passed, but Zarathustrianism is a living religion today. Consider Moses. 33 centuries have passed, and Judaism is a living religion. The Buddha, 25 centuries have passed, but look at his tremendous influence. In fact, it seems to be enjoying a new efflorescence, having come to the West. So you see, it is that way that the presence of the one who has realized transcendence affects humanity for century after century. This presence is a silence. This influence is formless and unconditioned. It is not easy to understand what is meant by my saying this presence is a silence. It works quietly. It works without being seen. It works without intellectual knowledge. The heart throbs in response. That is what happens. It's the heart which throbs in response. And the heart is that part of the whole mind which works formlessly. It doesn't need to put things into specific concepts and words. It works like that. To the light of reality, the living presence awakens the sleeper in the dark. The dark, whose substance is thought and speech, whose drive proceeds from the egoistic misconception of self, whose binding power is the burdensome conditioning by the past and by environment. Of necessity, the perfected Holy One must speak to his listeners, because people want him to speak, otherwise he wouldn't speak. There is a delightful and very instructive record in the Hindu writings. The pupil asks the teacher to expound the supreme truth embodied in the word Brahman to him. There is no sound issuing from the lips of the teacher. The pupil asks again, and there is no sound from the lips of the teacher. He asks a third time, and the teacher says, "I am conveying to you what you want, but you are not awake to it. You can't hear the silence." Of necessity, the perfected Holy One must speak to his listeners in the ordinary way, of course. That is what happened and happens now. The words are treasured. The words continue through time. Commentaries are written, and conflicting interpretations lead to fierce argument. This has happened with every single organized religion. This argument and quarrel and even war. No, the teacher meant this, and the other person says, no, the teacher meant that, you're wrong. And they come to blows. And so for the simple souls who hunger and thirst for reality, there is but stale bread and sour wine. Formal religion is fossilized religion. The church and the temple and the sacred tombs and the postures of piety may thrill and elevate and comfort and entrance, yet all too often they are monumental impediments to truth. They cover the living heart of religion with a vast rubble heap of illusions, mere pieces of death, leaving death to the dead. Let the true man go to the living heart. We were talking about the silence and so on, and how the silence speaks. Revelation speaks through the silence. We know from our own living experience, those of us who have been through it, and I think most of us have at some time or other, we know that when we meet someone, sometimes something happens between that someone and oneself. Not a word has been spoken, not a gesture made, and yet that miracle has taken place. And they know this is love. You see, the silence is the medium, the infinite eternal medium through which the message comes. That wonderful, this is one of the keynotes for today, that each man shall individually search out the living heart of his own free will and in his own way. Unquestioning acceptance of authoritarian teaching marks the impotent. Let there be unceasing vigilant investigation of that which is. So shall each man see the truth. That wonderful arc in human history, extending over 2 millennia, which saw the emergence of the founders of the great religions, from Zarathustra to Jesus Christ, and later on Muhammad and the Sikh teachers. They were great ones. Kabir and Guru Nanak and several others. There were 10 of them altogether. That arc will not repeat its old shape. The mechanical repetition of an expended pattern would prove but a monotony. Life discards the obsolete. Renewal is rebirth. There is no other sort of rebirth. Therefore, the world will not witness the rise of a new world-embracing religion and the establishment of a worldwide church which will either oust or absorb all other religious organizations. That sort of thing will never happen. It never has happened, despite the stupid, criminal behavior of fanatic followers. Wars in the name of religion are amongst the worst in human history. Look today at what is happening. Muslims and the Shiite Muslims and Israelites and others and so forth, and the Christians. It's happening again and again. Nor will the world see any existing religion do so. I mean, no new world religion will come into being, and no existing religion will do so. Despite all militant evangelism and activity characterizing the immature. Why do I become a militant evangelist? I am so conceited, so terribly conceited. I think that I know the truth. I know what is good for the other fellow. And I haven't the courtesy just to present it to him and leave it to him to judge and decide for himself. No, I'm going to force him. I'm going to catch him by the scruff of his neck and drag him into my heaven, with the result that we are both in hell. A religious totalitarianism may prove an even greater evil than any of the secular ones. This does not mean that the day of the holy ones is over. They have appeared through the ages and will continue to appear whether they are recognized or not. As in all past instances, whatever the Holy One of today or tomorrow will teach will be the expression of his individual realization of the truth. The word realization, of course, ordinarily connotes to see, to understand. But that is not its denotation. Its first meaning, fundamental meaning, is making real. To realize is to make real. It has come to fruition, to fulfillment, and that's it. The truth is the spirit parent of the word of all the great teachers. In him who keeps the word, which means in him who lives the holy life, there arises the stainless vision of the truth. He enters into the measureless communion, which is the realization of the transcendent. He is the living word. What such realization means and what is involved in such realization is at the very heart of all religion. It is the main theme of this book.